Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Tom Dormer is going to be on with us again this week, every Thursday, to discuss his struggles in life resulting in incarceration, prison issues, releases, and struggles after incarceration and the goals. Thomas has been educating us with his own experiences and the ongoing experiences of former fellow prisoners. Tom, at the age of 7, always wanted to be a professional soccer player, but those dreams were shattered when he ended up going away to prison at the age of 19, leading to 4 years in prison. When released from prison, he was 23 years old, moved to California to attend college to fulfill that dream. But again, a barrier to fulfilling that goal was an injured knee where he suffered and was unable to focus on that dream that he initially had. So Tom's goal has been going in a different direction, and he will be on with us today. I wanted to speak, however, on some of the issues with prison and prisoners and prison and the incarceration that they go through. There are so many prisoners in this world today, and right now with this virus that we have going on, it's even worse because the deadly pandemic is in the prisons now, and prisoners need to be released. There's so much controversy over who should be released. And I want to say there are nonviolent offenders who are in, there are even some that were due to be released in about 6 months who they are not even considering releasing, which is really a shame. There are first-time offenders of any crime that have been victims themselves prior to going to prison. And unfortunately, there's a lot of things that go on where people just don't understand or they don't care about that person because they are incarcerated. And we need to get over that vengeance and that retaliation and that hatred for people that we don't even know. There were so many that were so good before going into prison who are now offenders themselves. So we have to look at these things too. People make mistakes. They go to prison. They serve their time. And it should not be a life sentence. It should not be life without. It shouldn't even be a death sentence. So for a lot of these people that are in prison now with this pandemic who were nonviolent offenders, who were supposed to be released this year, whether it be next week or the month or the year, let them go now because this pandemic is spreading and it's spreading quickly. So we need to be compassionate ourselves because we can be just as criminal-like as people seem to think prisoners are, which they're not. And more so, there are many prison officials and guards, people that are employed with the Department of Corrections, who have more criminal-like minds than even the prisoners. So I wanted to get that factor out before we do welcome Tom again to join us. And I hope and pray that everyone looks at these situations that are right now occurring because there are so many advocates across the country, lawyers, and there are also politicians who are in favor of releasing prisoners as quickly as possible with this pandemic. So consider that and consider calling your representatives and encouraging that they do this as soon as possible. And now, again, we will welcome Tom Dormer. Tom, are you on with us?
Yes, I am. How are you doing this morning?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing very well.
I was just speaking about the situation that's going on in the country now where they are talking about the pandemic being in the prisons. And there are so many prisoners that are due to be released this year. And some of them are due to be released in October and November. And we're calling on having them released soon if they are going to be released this year. To do it soon because we hear the virus is now in the prisons and it's affecting a lot of not only prisoners but the staff as well. I listened to a couple of doctors talk about this issue and they said if this prison doesn't really start releasing prisoners, what's going to happen is eventually the hospitals on the outside are going to be filled with all these pandemic cases and it's going to be too overwhelming for them to even handle. So right now, that's something that we've also been talking about. But getting back to you, I want to know, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. I'm doing great. During these pandemic, it's very hard for everybody. But at the same time, people from my background or that have survived in a cage with a different scenery than freedom, we're thriving. I'm thriving and never been happier, never been better. You know, this takes a toll on your mental, but people that's been through it are battle tested, and they're very aware. They're prepared for situations like this. And I follow CNN News. I follow a bunch of very, very well represented news stations, and they talk every day about even quarantine is doing something mentally for people. It's very hard. People are getting personal days off of work and everything. And I'm just amazed, because I'm like, man, nobody talks about people in prison, you know, solitary confinement and things like this. But when people get out of prison, it's, you know, get a job. There's no programs. There's no nothing. And when the first thing that happens to them, it's, oh, you're bitter, or they deserve to go back. And it's like, it's just mind blowing that people that have their freedom, which you're born, and I took political sciences here for the first time. It's a general class in college in the state of California that you're required to take for any of your AA degree. So it just opens up your spectrum and your thoughts of the political world. And I never got into it because, you know, my voting rights are taken away. So I was like, you know what, if I can't vote, my voice doesn't matter. I don't really want to get into politics, but it was mandatory. I was glad it was mandatory. And it's just insane that, you know, people that are born with freedom in the United States, you know, it's a natural born right, and you don't really realize what freedom is until it's taken away. And then when it's taken away, you do realize what not being free is. And it's not, oh, going to prison for your crime. It's your freedom is taken away. You know, people don't understand when prisons file taxes, they don't file it under each individual's name. You know, they file it under how many people they have in that prison. You're just a number. You're just a property. You're the same as, you know, businesses that have property and tax reductions and things like that. So, you know, I'm just surprised. And I hope after this pandemic, people are starting to realize that, you know, at the end of the day, whatever you feel about this human being going to prison, if they are released and they do have a release date, you should be aware enough, or you should be matured enough to at least realize that they're getting out. They're getting out in your community. They're getting out around your children, around your nieces, around your nephews. And I'm not just talking about sex offenders. I'm talking about anybody. They're around them, drug dealers, everything. DUIs, they're around your family. They're driving on the road at nighttime when you are. And it's just, it puts everybody in danger. So I just hope after this pandemic, because I believe the people that are suffering the most out of this are the people that have short prison bits, that have a lot of hope. And now they're basically in solitary confinement, because when you're in prison and you get in trouble, there's a thing called room confinement. You know, they just put you in a room for X amount of days. You know, I had room confinement for 90 days, and yeah, I wasn't in solitary, and I was still allowed to have my items that I had in prison, but I had to maintain in my cell for 90 days. And if I had to go to the bathroom, I had to ask them and things like that. So I believe those people are suffering because, you know, they're, even though they're in prison and they're going through a lot, now they're in a box all day. And we've done studies. It's 2020, and we've done studies what that does to the mind. So those people right now are just, they're going through a lot. People that are waiting on transportation, people that are waiting on trials, people that are waiting on sentencing, it's all on hold. And I understand that the whole world's on hold. And priorities are going to be priorities in the justice system and getting people back to work and getting the community in the United States back up running. Let's just be honest, is a million times more important than the prison system to everybody's eyes. But people that are aware, there are not many programs for when people get out of prison to get them reintegrated back in society. And these people, whether you like it or not, they're being released as your neighbors and in your community. So.
Now, can you tell the audience the difference between being locked down in prison and being locked down in the situation that we are in now with this pandemic? I mean, a lot of people, I mean, we can't leave the homes. everything is being done more or less on Zoom and Skype, but there's a difference somewhere in between being in lockdown in prison and being in lockdown out in the community. Can you talk a little bit about that, Tom?
Are you talking about being locked down just in general, how it is in prison, just really quick, and then how it is right now, how they are in prison?
Yeah, because we are pretty much, we're in solitary, well, not solitary ourselves, but we're confined to the homes, whereas prisoners are confined to a cage. Just some kind of difference in your view of what's going on between now with us on the outside and with them on the inside.
Well, I talked to guys.
I know many are complaining, too, about not having their televisions, about not having their belongings. And someone actually mentioned that at least we can walk around from room to room or, you know, grab something to eat or have a cup of coffee. But there's so much. People complain in the communities about being confined, and it's kind of devastating to them because they're not in prison. They haven't experienced the same, you know, the same type of lockdowns or the same confinement.
Well, number one, I'll say it's very hard for people. You know, that's a situation. Most things people can relate. I believe we're all human beings, and I believe most people can look at a situation and they can relate to another human being in some type of manner. You know, we've all been through deaths. We've all been through very dark times. But in prison, it's hard for people just to relate because they can't even relate doing the crimes. They can't imagine, like, you know, there's nothing that would put them in a situation to do the crime. So, well, number one, it's hard for them to relate. And number two is I talk to people every day in prison. Not every day, but every other day I talk to them in maximum security prisons all the way down to minimum and medium security prisons. So I know how it's functioning in the state of Wisconsin and California right now. And there's rules and regulations, and that's a good thing that people can relate about living now. They can relate to changes. You know, we realize that we're not going out to the bars, we're not going out to the restaurants, you know, the beaches and everything are closed. So they can at least relate to, okay, it's a little different. And same things in the prison. So when you get up, most prisons at 8 o'clock, they open. You know, there's a count at 5:45 every single morning. You know, people don't realize they get up at 5:45 every single morning. And count is where they just announce it on the unit, 5:45 count. That's all they say. And you have to get up. And sometimes, you know, if you have two heavy sleepers and you're up until 2 in the morning and you skip your count, there's punishments for not just standing up every single day. And say you have 4 years and you don't stand up twice out of 4 years, which is like a pretty common thing as a human being, they'll send you to the hole or they'll give you a room confinement. They'll give you a ticket, it's called. They'll give you a punishment, reprimand, whatever you want to call it. But you stand up and you have to stand against the wall, back against the wall, hands on your side. You have an ID necklace that you have to wear. It has to be facing out front and you have to be staring at the other wall. You can't be staring at the correction officer, and they go around and they take count at 5:45. And then there's breakfast at 6:30. You know, they wait a couple minutes. The breakfast comes in and then they open it up to whoever wants breakfast. And then they do another count right before they let you out. And usually prisons, the main time they let you out is 8 in the morning. And 8 in the morning is they just open up your doors. And I'm talking about a medium security. So it's kind of in the middle from max. Clearly this does not happen in max. But in medium security prisons, which most people go to, you know, at 8 o'clock you're just able to go out. You have day room and everything is on a schedule in prison. So you go out to the day room and then you look at the gym schedule and it will tell you what time you're able to go to the gym. And most medium prisons, you're able to go to the gym 3 times and you're able to go to the yard one main time. So you're looking at your schedule on what you're going to do today. Like, okay, this is the 3 times that I'm able to go to the gym. This is the 1 time I'm able to go to the yard. Beside those times, it's called a day room where they have a couple tables and people can just sit at the table, play cards, or they can walk around. And there's a little courtyard on each unit to go outside and walk around. So it's kind of just open on that unit. And most prisons are split up into, you know, 15, 16 units. So not everybody's on the same unit. They don't have 2,000, 3,000 people walking around. They have about 100 people walking around, 200 people walking around. So it's a little different. But this one, what I've been told is, they split up the units into 4. So whatever your unit is, say you got 50 people, they're splitting it up into 4 to about 15 people. We're now 15 people are, hey, this wing, you guys are able to go out to the day room from 8 until lunchtime. Then this room, 8, lunchtime until 3. This room, you know, 5 to 7. So they're splitting up the day room. We're only able to go out one time. They're wrecked. They're taking it down from 3 times to 1 time, and that 1 time they're shortening it. So it's only about a 30-minute rec instead of a 50-minute rec. And phone calls, most prisons are not letting you use phone calls in the morning. They're trying to control the population. They're not letting them go in the morning. And visits are not happening, even on Zoom in prisons right now. Now in county jails, they are still happening on Zoom and over the videos. But as far as prison, there's no visits. So everything's just really cut down, and it's really just basically you're staying in your cell for about in medium prisons where they would normally make you stay in your cell just for nighttime. And in the morning, about 8 hours, they're making you stay in your cell, you know, close to, you know, 21 to 22 hours. And half of the prisons that I've been told is as far as meals, they're not letting everybody come out and sit at the day room for a meal. They're serving it inside of your cell. So it's basically 22 to 23 hours, 21 to 23 hours, depending on what prison you're at. You're just inside of your cell with your cellie, which, you know, you better have a good person that you get along with, which is not always the case. And it's not even 50% always the case. And you're just sitting in there all day, and you just got to basically whatever you have, and that's it.
That was a lot of information. What I was asking is, how do you feel like, when you were confined in the prison, in comparison to being confined to the home now that you're out, how do you feel? And how, just explain to the audience how it is, the difference between what you went through and what you're going through right now with this confinement to our homes.
Okay, well, it feels like when you dream about heaven, it feels like I'm in heaven right now compared to prison. So it feels like I'm in Beverly Hills and I'm in a movie and a fantasy, because there's so many more outlets out here. The one thing I explain to people is, don't get me wrong, we all have rough times. If you work a 9-to-5 job, 40, 50 hours a week, whatever, school, there's always something at least once a week or twice a week human beings can look forward to. You know, you can have a tough day at work and you can be like, you know what, I at least have one thing to look forward to. I'm going to get something to eat. I'm gonna do anything that makes me happy. I'm going to put in a movie that makes me happy. I'm going to go home to my dogs, to my kids, to my wife, to my husband, whatever the case may be. I'm going to go see a site. I'm going to walk around the block. Plus you have your room where, you know, you're looking at and there's things that are valuable in your room that cheer you up, a picture, anything. We're in prison. It's 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Everybody can relate to, oh, I've had a rough week. We've all said it. Like, man, this week has just been draining. But then the weekend comes. And then, but you're hanging out with your friends. And, but there's something to look forward to. Where in prison, the biggest thing I had to get used to is, damn, this week sucked. And then it was like, damn, this week just never ends. It just never ends. It's the same thing every day, negativity. And like I said, you know, by the time I was 20 years old, I've probably seen about, you know, 10, 15 people, you know, die. I didn't all see them dying, you know, right in my eyes. But I, you know, hearing it in the other cells, and it's just nothing but negativity. And out here, you have things to look forward to. You know, you have things to motivate you. You have the internet to look up, you know, motivational speakers. If you're just feeling down, you can look up something motivational songs, anything. If you have any type of drive or any type of passion and desire to better yourself, you have so many resources out here to just in the palm of your hands. Where in prison, you don't. You really have to find just the littlest things to get you going. So out here, I'm motivated. Like I said, I believe my dogs. I believe God. And I believe my support system has really saved my life. I have an excellent support system as far as my school, as far as some of my family members, and as far as, you know, my best friends and things like that to just reach out. what's up, man, how you doing? And just talking to somebody that I know that really cares. And then I have food. I'm a big food, you know, even though I look like in shape, I love food. I go make a meal. I walk around my house where it's, I don't have a CO, you know, where if I'm tucking your shirt or they're sending me to the hole. I don't have a situation where I'm getting up out of my room and walking to the kitchen and worrying about somebody stabbing me, which, don't get me wrong, that's only about a 1%. I don't want to sit here and make believe and talk of prison like the movies, because it's not. But still, the fact that it's a 1% and that it can happen, that tells you something about your mental state. You know, you're always unaware. It's just so nice to wake up out of bed and not have that feeling of instantly being alert, no matter what, to just instantly being alert, to like waking up and not seeing a fight, waking up and not seeing or not preparing for the worst. It does something to your heart. And over the years I've been out, it's really calmed me down. It's really let me have, you know, beautiful mornings, peaceful mornings, where in prison you don't have peaceful mornings. Everybody's yelling at each other. You can get a CO that's amazing, and then they come in the next day, they get in a fight with their wife or significant other, and they come in and they just take it out on everybody. All right, we're not using the phones today. And we're looking at them like, you can't do that. Yeah, you can. If you go use the phone, I'm throwing you in the hole. Like, situations just like that where here, you don't, it's so peaceful. You can make it peaceful, even though you some of them might be in the hood and really, really traumatic situations. There's still something that you can look forward to. So I feel great. I feel very blessed that I've learned by now. It's taking me time. Don't get me wrong. When I got out of prison, I couldn't sleep. I was very stressed out. And just so many things were running through my mind, and it took me a long time to get to this point. You know, you're talking to somebody that's been out 4 years. I don't know if I would be saying this if I was out 4 months. So it takes time. But at this time, I've been out so long, I have had so much self-awareness, so much looking in the mirror where I was like, okay, what are things I can do to get my mornings going, to get my day going, to get me functional, to get me happy again, work on my mental? And it was dogs, you know, because you wake up, and for me, my outlet was dogs. And, you know, some people, you have to find your outlet. What if it's working out? What if it's reading? What if it's anything, drawing, doing anything, going for a drive? Mine was dogs, because the minute you wake up, you have to let the dog out. You know, you have to wake up and you have to do something. You can't just get up and leave the house. You're going to pee and poop all over your stuff. You don't want that. So mine was, you know, I need a little responsibility and I need dogs. And they're just boom. And it started getting me going and it started getting me just happier.
I listened to a couple of doctors speak a couple of days ago, and they were talking about being in prison, that it causes the individuals to advance in age quickly, and they become, I mean, they get older quicker than their, you know, their time, and they become vulnerable to a lot of, especially to this new virus that's coming out. But that's one of the things that I've been hearing a lot of too, is the fact that being in prison causes someone to advance quickly in age, faster than normally if they were on the outside. What are your thoughts on that?
Could not agree with the statement more. You know, I was 19 years old, and the one thing that I always had that I couldn't admit until prison, I had an anger issue, you know, and now that I'm older, I'm looking back at it, I had a right to have an anger issue, you know, getting beat up in my sleep and things like that. I had a right to wake up at 7 in the morning. I may go to school at 7 in the morning and be mad, but at the same time, I was a child mentally. I let my emotions control me. And in prison, they hold you to such a high standard where, you know, when I would go, and I went for straight from high school to prison. So it was like I didn't have the college. I didn't have the maturity process where that's the age group where you mature. That's the age, the age in everybody's life. You know, if everybody went to prison from 19 until 23, it would be way different, you know, instead of maturing from 19 to 23 at your parents' house and with your friends and turning 21 and dealing with all the mistakes and learning. And you just can't do that because you're around people where, at the end of the day, you know, before I went to prison, if I would break something or I would get mad and I would just lose my temper in high school, you can't do that in prison. You end up losing your temper in the wrong situation. You don't go home. You know, it's a different feeling. You know, there's people that's been in there 20 years that physically at 19 years old, you haven't matured, buddy, and they'll humble you, you know, and there's people that they don't let that happen. So everything is a structure in prison where when you go to a unit, you might think you're tough, but there's somebody in every single unit in every single prison that's the top dog. And if you walk in there like your crap don't stink and you lose your temper and you're throwing the phone and you're just thinking that and you're not worried about anybody, for sure somebody's going to see that and say, no, this dude ain't just walking around the unit acting like he owns this unit. This is my unit. I'm going to have to go show him this is my unit. And depending on that human being, those situations can be very different. They can be a nice little talking to, or they can physically show you that, listen, for the rest of your life, you're going to remember this next 15 minutes, 10 minutes, and you're probably never going to rebound from this. And there's really nothing you can do. You can't call your parents. You can't call your friends. You can't do anything. You're just going to have to accept the situation, whatever way they want to show you. And I was just blessed to be humbled because, and I can only talk about myself. There's a lot of other situations where people learn different way, but how I got humbled was I was a know-it-all. I never had a male role model my whole life beside my best friend's dad that was my soccer coach. And even at that, I never had a real male role model that really had such an impact in my life. I listened to him until I went to prison. And I was in there about 3-4 months, and I was going crazy, you know, because I thought, you know, time was going to go by fast and it was going by slow. And I was losing my temper, you know, hanging up the phone. And one day, this guy named Spriggy Hensley Jr., you can Google him. He was in the Chicago Tribune. He's got an amazing story. He's a double lifer. He's a black belt. And he's one of the most notorious guys in the state of Wisconsin, where everywhere he goes, he's labeled as a weapon because he can kill anybody with his bare hands. COs won't get near him. Other inmates won't get near him. And he's still 50 years old, and within 2 seconds, he'll take somebody's life. And he's really not a bad guy. And one day, me and him, out of all people, started getting into it on my prison yard. And thankfully, he just walked over to me, and he's like, listen, Pitt, they call me Pitt in prison. And he said, just look around, man. He's like, I understand you have greatness in you. And this man didn't even know me. He said, I've never seen anybody like you have greatness. But look around. If you lose your temper in the wrong day, these guys are so physically gifted. These dudes have been lifting weight for 20 years. What would you do if one of these dudes went in your cell? And I was like, well, you know, I would beat him up. And he looked at me and said, really? He said, you can tell yourself that. But if one of these dudes wanted to come in your cell and rip off every limb in your body right now, they could, and you would do nothing about it. You couldn't. And he said, I'll bet you right now. I'll bet you a bag of peanut M&Ms you can't do 10 pull-ups. And I said, 10 pull-ups? I can do 10 pull-ups. I went over to the yard in front of everybody, all cocky, and I wasn't able to even do 3. And I was like, wow. And he walked over and he said, you can't do 3 pull-ups. There's dudes doing 50, dropping down, waiting 30 seconds and doing another 50. Do you understand how much stronger they are just physically? And he's like, Pitt, you got to work out. You got to protect yourself. You got to find a group. And the older group just took me under their wings. But that was my humbling moment where it really hit me, because in my city, I really did feel like if anybody rolled up to me, I would physically be able to handle it. And now I'm in a situation where I couldn't. So I had to mature and I had to listen to these guys because I didn't know anything. I knew about the outside world, but I didn't know anything about the inside world. And they were on me about reading books, and then they would read books. These dudes have 20 years of knowledge reading all these type of books, and they would ask me questions. Nope, you're wrong. You're wrong. And they would prove it time and time again. They would ask me questions about sociology, how the brain works, about working out. And then they would go get their book and prove it. See, you don't know what you're talking about. Here's the correct fact. And it was just humbling on top of humbling on top of humbling experiences where I was like, damn, they're right, man. I really don't know what I'm talking about. And they're right. I'm not physically gifted. And they're right that if I don't change, man, I'm never going to even survive in here. So that was my humbling situation, where I had to grow up instantly, right then and there at 19 years old, 3 months in the prison.
I guess you would have grown up fast.
But not everybody has that humbling situation, you know, because, you know, there are other white people that they don't take chances on. Like I said, you know, I got blessed, and I really, the day I came out of prison, the first thing I told people, I public spoke at my courthouse, and the first thing I told people was, if God Almighty could make me immortal right now, and he could say, you know what, Tom, you're going to spend 4 years in every state of, you know, the prison and go in the same system you went in, I think I would have probably died in about 45 states. think I've probably been murdered in about 45 states. And instead, in my state, I was a prodigy. I was untouchable. I can't even explain it, where I would walk on the yard, and as a white boy, 19, do you know how many times I heard, oh, why is he here? Why do you have the white boy here? Why is he allowed to walk around? And everybody just knew, like, man, if you touch him, you're having half the joint come up here. And it was just people seeing the hope in me. I finally had father figures. My first father figure, rest in peace, you know, I have a big mural on him on my wall. And he ran it, like I said, for the Blackstones, a notorious black gang out of Chicago. And there's never been a white person in that gang. Not that I was in the gang, but I was protected by them. And it's like, that's unheard of, just alone. And I was just blessed. For some reason, God put these people in my path, and he put me in their path. And he said, you know, this isn't the way. And he showed me that I was built for greatness. And even now, it's still hard for me to explain it. And I always ask my brothers every day, like, man, why'd you do what you did on me? Because I was crazy. And they just said, we seen the good in you, man. We seen you were different. We seen the good in you. And at the end of the day, you had a release date. You had 4 years, which was right in between, where it was two. It wasn't short enough, but it wasn't long enough to break you. We knew in 4 years, if we could train you and we could prepare you, you could get out running and sprinting and take off. And that's what they did.
You know, I think that there's good and even some really bad ones. You know, one of the things that I see is people like yourself that are humble. I can see someone that's really bad really becoming close and liking you, because sometimes when they go to prison, they might have committed a serious, serious crime. They might be a gang member or a gang leader. But when you look back at it, they probably became something like that because of the environment they grew up in, or the home that they grew up in. But they inside, I think, are looking for people like yourself that are humble, you know, that are not going in there acting all cocky like a lot of them. So even though, but there are some, I'm sure, that would take advantage of someone that's humble too. I'm positive about that. But I think maybe that's why it's a blessing, because I think that God put you in a position when you went in where you would be around someone like that. Like you said, you know, it was a blessing that you didn't come out, or that you were able to come out, but that you didn't come out worse than you went in a physical way.
Yeah, I agree. And Spriggy was, you know, a notorious guy in the prison system. He was well known everywhere. Everybody was like, oh, that's Spriggy. And he actually, one day, he never showed any emotion. He never showed he was happy. He never showed he was sad. He just, you know, he was always the same, motivated, worked out every day. And there was one day that he came out on the yard, and it was the first time anybody's ever seen him kind of sad. And he had double life. And he fought his case on trial, and he came out, and he was kind of sad, and I was the only one that went up to him. I was like, you know, hey, is everything all right? And he just looked to me, and he's like, you know, Pitt, if I would have taken my plea of life in prison, I would be getting out today. And he's like, I didn't take my plea of life in prison. I went to jury trial, and they gave me double life. So now I have 25 more years to go, and I'm never getting out. And he's like, that's okay. And he just said right away, he's like, that's okay. You know, that's life. That's the hand I was dealt. But he's like, you know, Pitt, I'm never getting out, but you are. And he's like, I live for people like you, because when you get out, a little piece of me gets out. And he was like, that's why I do what I do, because I want to see people that have hope. Same thing with my putter, you know, they gave 52 years, and putter, you know, turned down a plea of 20 years where he would have been out before I even met him. And he was like, you know, I'm not getting out. And he's like, I know when you get out, a little piece of me is going to get out. And he's like, that's why us lifers, it's crazy that the lifers are honestly the nicest people. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm sure they weren't the nicest people the first 10, 15 years. They were in max, and they had 50 years to go. But over time, the lifers that are 50 and 60 years old that have murdered 3 people, they are the most humblest, the church going. They've spent 2 decades spending on their life looking in the mirror and giving up that anger, giving up that bitterness, admitting that they were wrong, admitting, like, you know what, I shouldn't have done this. I pray they all, every single lifer that's murdered somebody, I swear to God, none of them has said, like, oh man, I'm glad I killed that dude. they've all said, like, man, I still pray for his family. Every single birthday that man that I know his birthday, every single birthday, I say, hey, man, happy birthday. I go in my cell. I pray for him. I cook a meal for him. And it's like thinking, like, damn, yeah, it's taken them years. But to do that in prison with no professional help and to do that by themselves, you're right. They have greatness in them. And they all looked at me, and they live through me. They live for people that have a little bit of chance.
That is something. That's why I say prison, it should never be stereotyped. There's so many, you know, in the Bible, in Genesis, when it first began, when God said, let us make man in our image, he made us in his image. So there has to be good in a lot of people. It has to be good in everyone. Some choose more to serve the other side, and some choose to serve his side. But like I said, what you experienced in that short time, to us, it would be short. To you, it would have been like forever. It gave you a lot of wisdom, really wisdom and discernment. And that's the one experience that you can actually say you benefited from when you came out. You were able to discern that. But since you came out now, you're working. I mean, you're going to school, but it's more or less like Zoom and things like that. Like everyone seems to be working now from the social media type. So how do you feel? Yeah. Does it bother you to go to school that way?
It does, but I can't complain. I did initially. Right now, my school, the in the state of California, all the colleges as far as the UCs, like USC and Stanford and UCLA, they haven't announced it. They might still have fall at their campuses, but they've announced summer online. But all the community colleges, all the JUCO colleges, all the D3 colleges in the state of California, last week they announced it officially that fall will be online. And most of our reentry students, they backed out. They were like, I can't do this. It's a little harder, you know, not a lot of them have, you know, the internet access. They don't have the computers. And it's just to ask them to go to school for the first time in years and years and years, being older, and then not physically having a teacher there to help you or a counselor or a tutor. It's a task that most of them just can't even complete, even if they wanted to. But me, right away, initially, I was like, damn, man. And then I thought about it, like, isn't everybody else going through this? You know, I mean, why can I complain? I mean, everybody else in the whole state of California is going through this. So I like challenges deep down. Deep down, they motivate me. Just like I said, I tore my ACL for the third time, and I'm a big personality, I'll be honest. But at the same time, I realize that not many people could walk in my shoes, so I embrace it. I'm not one of these guys that keep my mouth closed. And, you know, I'm one of these guys that are in a college classroom and I look around and I don't say, hey, I've had it worse than you. But I look around and I say, you know, the fact that I'm sitting next to you, I should not be sitting next to you. You should be motivated by me sitting next to you. You should want to do better. The fact that I spent almost five years in prison, I didn't touch a soccer ball for almost six straight years, let alone having five major surgeries, to still want to be a professional athlete, my chances, if somebody even threw me a 1% chance, I'd be lucky. I'd take that 1% chance. I don't even have a 1% chance to do what I'm doing. And I'm getting close. I'm seeing some type of results. So I embrace challenges. I do. There's something about making it harder that makes me want to grind my teeth, and it makes me want to add to my story. It makes me want to be like, you know what, one day I'm going to talk about this. Yeah, I'm going through this right now, but one day when I say, you know, I just didn't get my college degree, which it's already hard enough. If you already Google people of my age group and coming out and getting a college degree, I'm already in the single digits. And this is not to, oh, you know, I'm so cocky. It's not. If you get to know me, that's not my personality at all. But I'm embracing it. I'm letting people know why are there only single digit people that go to prison in my age group that get a college degree. It shouldn't be single digits, but it is. So I'm going to let you know that. I'm going to make you aware of that. Then on top of it, you make school online. You can whittle that down even at least 50% for that. So I embrace these challenges. And at the end of the day, I just have so much confidence in myself, and I have so much, you know, weight on my shoulders. I do this for everybody. Like I said, I really would be the first person in the United States, in the history of the United States, in hundreds of years, to go to prison and to ever make a professional contract, whether that's a semi-pro, whether that's a Mexican League soccer team, whether that's anything, $40,000, $50,000. There's about 1,000 soccer teams, if not more, in the whole world that you're damn right I'm going to be one of the top few thousand players. You're damn right I'm going to make one of these teams. And if I do, I will be the first person in the history of the United States to ever walk my shoes. There's not one other human being that's ever walked my shoes. So for me to have these goals, I'm going to let everybody know how absurd they are. So when I reach them, I can open up doors. I can just open up doors. I can bring a lot of people with me. And at the same time, this isn't me doing all the work for them, because I wouldn't be able to do the work without them. So this is a team effort, because if I wouldn't have survived in prison, which I wouldn't have by myself, I wouldn't be surviving out here. And that's the one thing I have on most people that go to prison. I dominate in the real world. I'm very aware of how the real world works and how to function in the real world. I was very blessed to have visits every week. I was very blessed to stay in tune in the real world, where I didn't just have prison and prison and prison, where when I come out, I don't know how computers work. I don't know how colleges work. I don't know how to stand up for myself. I don't know the law. No, I know how the real world works. So they know how prison works, and that's where a teamwork works.
You're an inspiration, because you came out of prison. You came out of prison so motivated and ready to go. You've done something that some prisoners, they say when they come out, they're going to do this, this, and this, and they come out and they forget, or they just move on, and they, you know, it's a shame because they don't do something with it. And you came out, you're in school and doing as much as you can. We have a caller. Who's calling on? What is your name?
Hello?
Yes.
Can you hear me? Hi there.
Yes,
My name is Elle.
Oh, hi, Elle. I believe you had mentioned something on Facebook the other day. I wanted to have you mention a little bit about what you were talking about on Facebook that time you had mentioned.
Yeah, sure. I mean, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I was really enjoying listening to the conversation from the beginning, and thank you so much for the insight that you know, Tom was sharing from his personal experiences. I think that's super valuable, and you know, not only to the general population, but also to you know, our brothers and sisters that are currently incarcerated and really do need you know, that hope and knowing that they do have, you know, something to look forward to when they come home. So I don't remember specifically which of the many topics that have been going on, you know, that we were discussing online, just because, you know, due to, you know, COVID-19, there's been so much going on.
Yeah. And we're into a lot of the groups, too, so that is kind of difficult because it was a different – I don't remember what group. But you had some insight into some things, too, and I wanted to have you mention it.
Yeah,
about
sure.
The prison
issue. Yeah, absolutely. And I can share a little bit about the organization. You know, it's on – we've been active on Facebook, Massachusetts Incarcerated Individual Advocacy, which we actually my friend, close friend Jamie Lee and myself started earlier this year when there was retaliatory measures by the Department of Corrections in the Susa Baranowski Maximum Security Prison. We both have loved ones that are incarcerated there, and we couldn't sit back and do nothing. We had to take some type of action, so we developed the group with the goal of advocating for the humane treatment of incarcerated individuals in the state of Massachusetts specifically, with an underlying goal of, you know, eventually someday dismantling mass incarceration as a whole in Massachusetts, which, you know, feels like an impossible feat. But, you know, we started off with this goal of helping with this retaliatory measure in Susa Baranowski, and it turned into a literal emergency with COVID-19. And what we did was we started, you know, reaching out to all of our friends and family members who also had incarcerated loved ones, and started developing a membership of friends and family of incarcerated individuals, and then also just advocates and supporters of incarcerated individuals in Massachusetts. what started to happen was we were talking about COVID-19. We started talking about how the safest thing is to decarcerate, to get as many people home as possible so that those that are still left in prison are able to, you know, socially distance from one another. It's really impossible under, you know, the high numbers of individuals that are in our prisons and jails now. And as we started kind of sharing some of that information, we started getting data from these family members saying, yes, this is absolutely an issue, but also, you know, our family members are eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches every day because no one's working the kitchens. The staff in the prisons are, you know, they're not following the correct sanitation protocol. So we made the decision to put together a survey, and we surveyed members from, I think it was 30-plus institutions in Massachusetts, and we got data that was helpful for us to you have speaking points. So 81.3% of our members reported prison staff were failing to wear masks and gloves correctly or not following sanitation protocol. Most staff members, 81.3%, and this is so concerning to us. And then another, you know, 58.1% reported COVID-19 positive individuals being housed outside of quarantine or in close proximity to other people. So that's more than half is not following the guidelines that the CDC is setting. If someone's positive or has symptoms, they should be on quarantine away from people. And then 75% reported being denied access to nutritious food specifically due to COVID-19. And we know there's already a nutritional problem in prisons and jails. Individuals that have, you know, diabetes can't survive on, you know, on the food that's in prisons. If you have diabetes, it's a mess.
Tom was mentioning earlier about, you know, the confinements and things like that. But he mentioned something that I heard from one of the attorneys a couple of days ago. He said prisoners are not just numbers, you know, and this attorney said the other day, prisoners are not just numbers, they're human beings. And so what you're talking about and some of the things that Tom was talking about earlier, it almost coincides with the way things are handled, you know, in the prisons. You know, the solitary confinement, but also the meals, all the freedom that, you know, most people would have being sentenced. So what you're saying, it makes a lot of sense as well. And I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No,
continue.
Please. I just kind of wanted to speak to the most important data that we got from our members. And another, I think really the most important one was that 75% of respondents are in cells with two or more people. And how can you socially distance when you're in, some of them are dorms where there's, you know, 30 plus people in a dorm. There are people coming in and out of the dorms, staff. Newly incarcerated individuals are coming from outside into these units where everyone's together. They're, you know, cohabitating. And basically what we did with this data is we reached out to a number of representatives at the governmental level, at the Department of Corrections level. You know, we talked to state representatives and senators and anyone who would listen to us. We drafted a letter and we've been making phone calls. You know, asking for things like extensive training for mass prison staff, prison and jail staff on how to use PPE, the masks, and how to properly sanitize, because these guys don't know how to properly sanitize a telephone. They're, you know, this isn't part of their scope of responsibilities normally, so they really need that training. We asked for extensive sanitization of all prisons and jails by professional sanitization companies, widespread testing, because unless we know how many people actually have COVID-19, how do we know the numbers? How do we know what the risk rate is? How do we know what level of decarceration is essential to save lives? We don't. And they're choosing not to test so they can say their numbers are low. You know, we ask for a dietary plan because we're sick of our loved ones eating, you know, bologna and cheese and peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. How can you protect your immune system without, you know, the proper fruits and vegetables and a filling meal with the number of calories that you need to sustain, you know, a healthy weight? And then, of course, we ask for all incarcerated individuals to be housed in single cells immediately until the pandemic has ended. And the only way that's going to happen is with mass release of these individuals that you were talking about earlier that have less than 6 months to serve, that are, you know, 50 years of age and older and have chronic health issues. These people that we're literally trying to save their lives at this point. It's a pandemic is an emergency for everyone on the planet, but no more so than individuals that are housed in prisons and jails because they are helpless. They cannot help themselves, and we need to help them.
What do you think about that, Tom? And you don't have to rush, either one of you, because this is an hour and a half show today.
Oh, thank you.
I think she's perfect.
I added a half hour because we were expecting Joe to be on the line, too. We had a caller in last week. But, Tom, you want to answer that one?
I don't think there's anything to answer. I think it was all statements. I mean, she sounds perfect. She sounds knowledgeable. It's nice to have somebody that's at least knowledgeable with the background this is in, Tom. And I'm not saying people that don't have, you know, you have to have somebody in prison to know what you're talking about, because that's not the case, or you have to be in prison. But there's really nothing I can say about that. She's 100% correct about the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches my friends have in there, my brothers have in there. And it's true. They're just putting them in bag lunches. And every single month, there's called a training day. I think it's universal in the United States for correctional officers. There's new correctional officers that come in. Ours was on a Tuesday. It was on the first Tuesday of every month. The prison was shut down how it is now. Basically, everybody's in their cell. You're only allowed one rec. Everybody's in there 23 hours a day. And throughout all the meals, instead of breakfast, lunch, and dinner being served regularly, there's just peanut butter. You get two peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and then you get one bologna sandwich and a little carton of milk. And it's just training day. You know, all the new COs in that prison, either maximum, minimum, it's all the way down, every single prison. They just walk around and, you know, the sergeants, you know, teach them what to do, what to look for, and so on, things like that. And that's basically what's happening every day is a training day. The COs, and they say all the time, the COs that are serving them with bag lunches, every single one of my brothers in there say that they are not wearing gloves, they do not have masks, and that's it. And they're bringing this stuff in from the outside world. You know, the COVID-19 didn't get into prison by an inmate. You know, it got in by correctional officers. And like I said, there are good ones. You know, just like police officers, every single time I talk about a police officer, I'm not saying every single one is bad, because if every single one is bad, you know, the world would be going to hell. You know, there are good ones, and we need good people to join up in law enforcement and to be good correctional officers. But she's absolutely correct with the nutritional value. I'm out here trying to take in kinesiology in college, and you just can't build up your immune system. You can't survive with not having, not walking, not doing anything healthy for the body physically. And then on top of it, the nutrition you're putting in is the peanut butter and jelly. And you got to think about the peanut butter. We can buy out here the natural peanut butter or the good peanut butter, and the peanut butter that's, you know, $1 for a whole huge jar. That's the peanut butter they're getting and things like that. So I have nothing to say, but I'm very just surprised how knowledgeable she is.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I've been doing my homework because this is something, you know, I'm extremely passionate about. And having an incarcerated loved one, my boyfriend of 13 years is currently incarcerated, and I have other family members. My cousin, Sean, is actually coming. He's in Virginia and maximum security prison, and today is his release date. So we're really excited to have him home today. I haven't got the call yet, but I'm looking forward to talking to my little cousin I haven't talked to in a couple of years. So having loved ones that are incarcerated, yeah, we're really excited. So, and now just hopeful of him doing positive things, you know, like you've been doing. So knock on wood, hopefully everything will go well.
Yeah, well, the number one thing to do positive things is a support system. It's not, you know, because there's going to be ups and downs, don't get me wrong. Even at me, you know, to be out for 4 years, I would be 100% lying. Saying I didn't get lucky in a couple of situations, you know, where it could have went way, way worse, you know, when I've spoken about the dog park, me pushing a man at a dog park that tried to hit my dog, and getting my car surrounded and them charging me with disorderly conduct, disturbing the peace. After they said they would let me go, they're like, you know, without a warrant, they're like, hey, if you don't have any warrants, we're going to let you go, sir. It sounds like just an average dispute, look me dead in the eye, have it on camera. And then all of a sudden, I'm getting my car surrounded. I'm getting tickets, every single ticket you can even think of. And it was up to my PO, you know, they called him, hey, are we locking this guy up? And my PO was like, no, you know, he's going to fight it, and we're going to see what happens. You know, not everybody's blessed with a PO. So my freedom, and it's crazy, my freedom is not always in the palm of my hands. And that's the crazy part, because if I would have a bad PO, you know, right then and there, I would have been in jail. and I would have been tainted, and I would be going back, and I might be going in prison because I'm on felony probation instead of just probation. So, you know, like I said, you know, I've been lucky, I've been blessed to be out for 4 years, and yes, I've made most of the right decisions, but you would be crazy to think that somebody, you know, is never once going to do anything to follow all the rules. You know, you're damn right I've been at a bar. Could I go back to prison for going to a bar? Yes. People look at me as, you know, a prodigy and somebody being great. Even I make mistakes. Even I, you know, at the end of the day, I turned 21 inside of a cell. I wanted to experience just one time what it would be like. Now, I didn't get drunk. I didn't drive. I didn't, you know, get in any fights. I stayed, you know, I went out with a very group, my family, my parents, everybody that had, you know, my back. But at the same time, yeah, I wanted to know what it was like in life. I don't know why. Drinking is not important. I haven't drank since. But I wanted to experience one time going out with my family, having a beer with my dad and having a shot with my sister. That's technically breaking the law. Not the law, but it's technically breaking the rules on probation. So, you know, I've been lucky. And, you know, I just, the number one thing is a support system, just to have people to know, you know. Nightmares, I still have nightmares. I still wake up some days 4 years later with night sweats and things. And going to prison is not just something where it's like, okay, you know, he's going to make good decisions and eventually he'll be good. People need to understand it's a life sentence. It's not you have to baby this guy. It's not you have to give him so many passes. Oh, he's been to prison, he's able to do this. No. You hold them to a high standard. That's one thing people that's never been to prison need to understand. You hold him to a high standard. And you can talk to people different that have been to prison. You can be very point blank, because everybody around them, it's black or white. It's no gray. It's no, oh, it's okay that you, no. Listen, you get your ass together. You get your act together. You do this. You do this. But I love you. I support you. I'm here all the time. Yeah, you know, you're always checking up. Hey, what's on your mind? Sometimes they just need a vent where they don't need any response back. Sometimes they need a lot of advice. So it's a support system. And I believe people that make it, they have a support system. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. You know, I look at prisons as almost like military, being in Vietnam, because the fight is there, the fear is there. I mean, they're going through so much. And someone can go in for a violent crime, but like someone else said, they outgrow it after so many years. And Elle, I don't know how long you said your loved one has been in for how long?
So my boyfriend, he has been in for 2 years, and he's actually coming home soon. So he had to serve time previously and then had to – it was basically a probation violation. So he has less than a month now left, or I guess a little bit over a month now left, and we've been fighting to get him out sooner because, you know, that has been the goal, is to get people with less than 6 months out, you know, today.
Yeah.
But, you know, he will be home soon.
That's what we were talking about prior to your call, is that if they're going to be released this year, release them now to
right,
you know, to prevent the risk of the virus. And this is a major issue. They need to start releasing some of these prisoners right away. If they're going to be out this year, release them. At least get them out.
Yes.
Because the hospitals were, a couple of doctors were talking about, what's going to happen is if it hits, and it's going to, they said it's inevitable, it's going to hit so many prisoners eventually, they're going to be overwhelmed in the prisons. These prisoners are going to be having to go into the hospitals on the outside, and it's going to overwhelm the hospital staff. So this is why they need to release as many as possible.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree. And, I mean, it's you know, we talk about this, you know, in our groups a lot, the fact that it's a trickle down, right? So the governor's not taking action. The, you know, the legislator's trying to, but it's a slow process. And, you know, in the judiciary branch, they're kind of passing the buck as well. And nobody wants to take accountability for making the decision, and a lot of it stems from the fact that they're afraid of the repercussions. What happens if they release one prisoner and that one prisoner, catches a new charge, and then it kind of backfires on them, or whatever their justification behind deciding not to act, even though so many lives are at risk. Like we said, in the hospitals and the family members of the guards, and it really does impact so many people, and they're indecisiveness in their decision not to act is going to have a bigger repercussion than if they were to make the decision to decarcerate, especially for these people that are supposed to come home anyway. There's little difference if my loved one comes home today versus in 2 months from now, because he's not only, you know, is the likelihood of his reoffending low, where is he going? There's nowhere to go. We're all stuck in our houses anyway. So it just does not make sense to me, and I think most of us that are aware of this fight, it just doesn't. So
yeah, I,
you know,
agree.
I agree, you gotta
outweigh the pros and cons. Like, when you think of a situation, just the pros and cons, like, there's really, you're never going to have a situation where, especially involved in prison, you know, you're never going to have a situation where, oh, it's 100% going to work. You just never, there's nothing that even us can come up with where we're like, hey, everybody is going to work out. It's just the way the world works. And you look at the pros and cons and letting people go that have less than a year, to the pros and cons of that, the money you're saving on food, now you can spend on the nutrition for the ones that are in there, where you're really not spending any more money. You can just up the nutrition because you're spending way less money on thousands of people that are eating these peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. The health risk, even to the COs and the DOC workers and the government workers, the health risk to the prisons, like, you got to outweigh the pros and cons. And really, the cons are so little right now as far as reoffending,
right,
being in the neighborhoods and doing crimes, that it's like, it's mind-blowing that not one single person that has that power where they speak up doesn't go anywhere.
Right.
Exactly. You know, the money saved, as you said, can go into the food. It can go into better food. I wonder sometimes where all this good food is supposed to be going, that everyone on the outside seems to think prison is benefiting from, because I hear so many prisoners talk about being fed a lot of rice and a lot of mashed potatoes and anything to fatten them up, but nothing healthy. But saving,
right,
saving on the money that would be saved, they can use for so many different things, and you know, it just make it better in the prisons for these prisoners.
I mean, this
I think
is
money is really the key.
Oops,
sorry, please go ahead.
I'm just going to say real quick, and then I'm going to let you go. This is just for us, though. You know, you got to think as far as your loved ones in there, your family members are in there. It's a high priority to you. You think about it every day, but, you know, we really do have to come up with a way to make this a priority to the world and to the United States and to the people in power. And at the end of the day, with this pandemic, we just have to be humbled a little bit to realize, like, we understand people in prison and mass incarceration, even though all your statistics, all your things that you're coming up, nutritional value and everything you're coming up with, which is good, where is that on the spectrum in the world right now? And getting the world back and the United States back, and where is that on the priority list? No matter what, governors and senators and people in Congress, there are so many things higher on their value and higher on their priority board. It's just not a realistic thing. So we have to come up with something where, like you said, it matters. It's going to show. It's going to prove itself. And like you said, I just don't understand that. Even though it's not high on the priority list, what is anybody losing out on letting guys go that, like, oh, okay, you have a possession charge of 30 grams of marijuana, you have 3 months left, and you're in a medium security prison, and you have letters from your family saying, hey, if you release him, he's going to come home to my house. Really, like, where people are like, all right, let's just have somebody in place. They have a parole board. They have a PRC board. They have people that are paid by the government to release people that are not working right now, that are not doing their job, that are not working day in and day out how they normally would. Why can't we, and that have benefits, that have pensions, that have retirement funds, 401k, why are we not saying, you know what, let's put these people to work a little bit, and let's let these look at the case files of every single prison that they have these people in place and say, look at your prison. See who you can really come up with. See if you can get 100 or 200 people. And if you can't, you can. And if you can, you can. I just don't understand how hard that is.
especially
you know,
when they have a place to go to.
Nope.
If they have a place to go. Exactly.
Yeah, I agree. Because when they get out, you know, just like your significant other, I'm sure that you wrote a letter. I'm sure that there's something on his release plan by now. If he's getting out in 2 months, he's got to have a release plan. You know, everybody's got to have a release plan. You got to start working under a release plan at least 6 months prior. You meet with your social worker. There's usually a social worker on every single unit. And I just don't understand, but what are these social workers doing? There's no movement,
right.
You know, and the social worker's job, number one, is to get you to not home. That's not their job, number one. It's to look at their unit, and it's to say, okay, this guy sees the parole board in 6 months. What are his realistic goals? You know, okay, he's got 20 years left. He's not going anywhere instantly. Boom, next file. Okay, this guy's got 10 years left, not going anywhere. Okay, this guy has a four-year prison bit, and he has 2 years left. Let's think about lowering his security. All of these questions are not questions anymore, and that's their number one job, is to get you to the next facility or the next step. There's no next steps now. Nobody's getting transferred to the next prison.
Right.
Nobody's movement. So the social workers' jobs, which they're getting paid to do to go to prison, should be, let's try to get a couple of these guys out. Okay, maybe the next step is call these guys in and say, okay, you have a year left on your release plan. Do you have somewhere to go? Do you have a family? Do you have a support system? Do you have an address when you get out? And there's a lot of people that would be like, you know, yes. And then they would call their family and they check in. Hey, if we release him, I just don't understand that there's no movement in the prison system right now, in the jail system, in the DOC system. And that is the number one job of a social worker. And there's a lot of social workers at each prison that why don't they change and say, you know what? Let's start working on release plans. And you know what? You are going to meet guys that have 6 months that they're going to come in there and say, listen, I have nowhere to go. If you release me, I'm homeless. If you release me, okay, we understand. We're not going to put those people to the back burner, but why in the world are we not taking the people that say, yeah, I have a family to go to, and they call their family and say, yeah, we support them. And when you get released, the PO is going to ask you if he's at your address. The PO asks you and makes it mandatory to say, if you see this guy breaking the law, you have to report that. Do you know that's part of his probation rules, to get released to an address? We're saying, hey, if you see him with a gun or you see him selling drugs or breaking the law, you have to tell your PO. And if you have people saying, yes, we support that, if he breaks the law, yes, that's not allowed at our house, and we have a good support system for him when he gets home, how are these people just forgotten about? But then in 6 months, all of a sudden, it's, oh, you're a regular citizen, and you should go get a job, and you should do this. That is just mind-blowing.
I think what happens, though, is that the social workers and the medical staff, they all, when they become employees of the Department of Corrections or contracted with them, they become their puppet. And I think this is what happens. A social worker now all of a sudden is working with the DOC, and she's going to be doing as the DOC wants her to do. And that's unfortunate because, as you said, she should be working right. I was on a forum recently this past week, and one of the issues that someone brought up was the fact that these prisoners, when they come out, they have no place to come out. They're releasing some of them to the communities without having any plans in place. As you just mentioned, Tom, the social worker should be working in unity with the individual and any other resources out there to connect all these things, these dots, so when they do come out, they already have a place to go. In Elle's place, her loved one has a place to go, so they should let him out now. For those that don't have, they should start working on it. The social worker mainly should begin the process herself.
I think what you said is really important, in that those social workers, they really are the puppets of the DOC and the organization, or the, you know, county jail or whoever they are working for. And at the end of the day, what's most important to the people that they're working for, the DOC, is their budget. So this is all very, very much driven by money. And the number of incarcerated individuals is what drives their budget. So they're able to approve overtime, and that goes directly to the labor organization that you know, the staff at the prisons are working under that are advocating for them to have more overtime, to have more rights, or whatever the case may be. Everything is driven by the number of incarcerated individuals at a facility. So it is in the DOC's and the facility's direct benefit to have the highest number of incarcerated individuals possible. So they're false motivated at this time to have as many, to not release any incarcerated people, because it's to their detriment. If in a hypothetical situation or in an ideal world, if 50% of a institution is cut, there would have to be layoffs at the DOC, or they can't justify keeping their staffing numbers that they currently are. The DOC's fight to build new prisons, so part of their budgets are to build new structures, and they can't do that if they don't have the number of incarcerated individuals to justify that. So it very much is, it's all about money at the end of the day. You know, it's also about the contracts that they have with security.
For profit.
Yeah, and very much so. Absolutely. And that's where the conflict of interest lies, you know, with the food vendors and, you know, the phone call providers, and now the tablet and video call providers, and they're motivated to keep them in there, and they're able to use those the stigma of incarceration to justify that, and that those same, you know, Reagan era tactics of crime is bad and criminals will hurt you, so let's keep them in jail. And they use that facade really just to make money at the end of the day. And that's what we're seeing now, which is really unfortunate.
It is. It is. We have a governor that doesn't want to move too quickly. And this is some of the things that they are trying to put pressure on to try to release some of these prisoners, as many as possible. And as soon as possible.
I think a lot of the times the governor defers to the DOC and will say things like they trust the DOC and they're experts in this area, but without taking into account the, conflict of interest of, them keeping their jobs and their budgets. Then the not only the lives and the health of the incarcerated individuals, but also of the staff and the public at large, are really being done a disservice by the governor and the executive branch of state government at large, not implementing some type of transparency or oversight, a neutral party to kind of to overlook these things. Most specifically during COVID-19, but I think in general, when it comes to disciplinary tickets and the inability of certain incarcerated individuals to even receive good time so that they can go home on a timely basis is run by the DOC and these facilities that are motivated to keep people inside. So it's really a systemic issue, and the system is really broken.
I don't know if you knew the former commissioner, but he is now the executive director of the Department of Public Safety. Very, very good friends with the governor, as well as the current commissioner. So here you have talking about a conflict of interest, but it's there, and this is the reality of it all.
It's so true.
Prisoners have had.
Yeah, I was blessed that during my release time, there's no good time in the state of Wisconsin, so that term does not exist for that state. But
wow.
Number two is, I was just going to say, for my time is, there's something called the 85%. You know, you can serve 85% of your time, and then you submit paperwork to try to get that 85%, you do an appeal form. And I was blessed to do my appeal form. And at the time I did mine in 2016, the success rate was under 7% of people that got their 85% time. So really any type of good time doesn't exist. And I told people from the time I went in that, what my release date was, my 85%, they would be like, man, you can't guarantee you're going to get that. And I looked at every single person. I never wavered. My family, everybody would say, I'm getting that. And mm-hmm. I got it. And I got it after I did 3 years, my first 3 years, with one minor ticket. So in Wisconsin, you can get a minor, which if you get a couple of minors, it accumulates to a major. And a major, you end up going to segregation. And I got one minor ticket in 3 years. And in 6 months, my last 6 months, or way longer, 6 months, but my 6 months prior to release, I ended up getting four major tickets. And they were all... they were all bogus tickets. I didn't do anything that they said on my major ticket. And I still,
I
my family, they were crying and they were like, man, you're not going to get your 85%. I still said, I'm getting my 85%. Thankfully, the judge gave me my 85%. But when he gives you your 85%, it's weird, you know, because the social workers, I'm 50-50 on them. They do have a lot of power. But it's also really unrealistic to think a social worker is going to put their job on the line for one of us. But they don't know that when the judge grants us our 85%, it's up to the social worker to then do the release plan immediately. And they have up to 28 days after we do the release plan to then release us. It's a social worker. It's not the judge. It's not the warden. It's a social worker on the unit. And my social worker, actually, when I was doing my release plan, and I told her, she said, what do you want to do? I said, I want to go to college. I want to be a pro athlete. I want to do this. I want to travel across the country. She got so mad at me. And trust me, I'm talking about a negative social worker, but I did have two previous to her that were excellent. So don't get me wrong. But she was so mad at me because she looked at me so many times and said, this is so unrealistic. Like, I can't believe you're getting out and you think you're going to accomplish this. And I said, yeah, you know, I am. And she's like, well, what do you have support? I had over 100 addresses on file, letters of places I could stay. 100, unheard of. I had
wow.
things lined up. I had about 10 jobs that wrote saying, yep, he's got a job the day he walks out of prison. She got so mad at me that I had so much support and so much things that she couldn't deny me. She looked at me. She said, all right, get out. You're getting released in 21 days. I'm at 28 days. She says, I'm making you wait 28 days, and then you can get out. And I was like, are you kidding me? You know, and then she called the white shirt. She tried to put me in the hole because clearly I got mad saying, you know, because I could have got released in 6 days instead of 28 days. So I went on the phone, and they released me the next week because I had so many of my family members, and rest in peace, my grandma, number one, writing the newspaper and everything. But that's what I mean about these social workers. They have power to release people. They have power to look at their files and look at these release files, like your significant other right now, that they can look at and say, listen, man, this dude has 6 weeks, 8 weeks left, and he has an address to go to. He not only has an address to go to, he has a loved one saying that he's going to abide by all the rules, saying that she is going to help him with jobs. She's going to help him with transportation to the job. She's going to help him get transportation eventually. She's going to help him with whatever he wants to do on his release plan. And those go a very long way. I actually had to have the number one captain of that prison walk in there with me back to her office saying, hey, you have to bump up that 21 days. I don't know what you have to do, but you got to bump it up because this guy's getting out. He's got so many people calling up to the warden. He has so many letters. We're going to let this guy out a couple weeks early. So it's possible. And we keep, you know, hitting the nail on the head, but it's just, it doesn't start with the social workers. It starts with just somebody in power. It's just how the world works.
Right.
It starts with the person above.
Yeah, and I think that's so true. And first of all, that's great that you have such, you know, so much support and were able to kind of leverage your support to help you with your release plan. And I wish that there was more, and you know, social workers definitely do have power, and some of them are obviously more caring than others. But I really wish that there was that was the motivation. If the motivation of correctional facilities was actually to quote unquote correct behavior or give the individuals that are leaving, you know, a second lease on life and to help them and give them support systems in the community and, you know, there's so many, you know, to minimize recidivism and if those were the true goals of these systems, I think, you know, we'd all be a lot better off. And of course, not everybody has a great support support system. You do. My loved one does. But not everyone has someone to advocate for them or to support them when they come home. And that's when I really think it's important that we build community services to help. And but again, it's an issue of funding and allocating of those funds in the budget and the powers that be. And people like us that are willing to hold, you know, our representatives accountable and continue to advocate and be the voices of incarcerated individuals, we cannot give up. We can't. We have to keep this fight up. Things are complicated because of COVID-19 right now, and I think a lot of the focus has shifted to that specifically, which is important and valid. But moving forward, as we overcome this struggle, it's important to continue to keep up that fight. And yeah, we just need to keep being their voices because the state and the federal government really want to silence them, which is not fair, and it's against their rights as humans at this point.
I just love how the guy that got out of prison on Trump's team still had 7 years left, and he served only 1 year in prison out of a 8-year sentence, but he gets it. And, you know, the world is constantly showing us, and that's why having someone in prison, first of all, you're an amazing human being, because being with somebody in prison, and I'm not always talking about a significant other, a family member, anything, it's draining. It is absolutely draining. The money on my phone, the money that they need. It's
emotionally,
number one.
Physically draining.
It's draining. So, like, you know, it puts a toll on that relationship. But I do believe all of my relationships of the people that supported me for years in and years out, we have such a strong bond now where it's like now that we're out and we're able to send text messages and little pictures and Snapchat, we have such a strong bond. It's insane. So if you can survive this, trust me, you can survive anything. Let me tell you that, number one. And it's just so hard because you look at your significant other and you look at your person, your loved one, somebody you love, you have blood or whatever the case may be with this person struggling so hard. And it's just, they are constantly reminded and beat down. And most of the people that go to prison, and I've talked about this many times, they have self-value. They feel like they're, you know, they're champions. They feel like they're worth something. And just day in and day out, not even in prison. When you get out of prison, you're beaten down, but you're expected. That's what to be expected, belittled and beaten down. But then when you get out of prison, what breaks most of these guys and what you see these 17 and 18 and 20-year-old kids getting at their first argument and pull out a gun, some people are looking at them like, what the hell is the matter with them? But at that point, they are so tired of being belittled. They come out of prison and they assume that it's like, damn, I'm treated the same again. Damn, I'm back. And then they're reminded again, day in and day out, you are an inferior human being. You don't have the right to vote. You don't have the right for half of these jobs. You don't have the right to do this. I have the right. Your POs come to your jobs and belittle you and say, hey, come off the line of work. Come on, man. This guy just got out, or this woman just got out of prison, and they're working and they're going to college, and here, pee in a cup. Or, hey, I want you to come over here at this time. Come over here. Or you better answer my phone call. And it's just a system, a revolving door to constantly remind you, even by the police officers, oh, you're on probation. Okay, come over here. Everything, day in and day out. And people assume that when you get out of prison, even I did, I assumed, like, man, I'm back. You know, I used to be a king of my city. And I'm back, baby. And then you're just slowly reminded that, you know what, you're physically back. But we're going to constantly remind you, you're not treated like your neighbor. You're not treated like, you know, somebody else at school. You're an inferior human being. And it just takes a toll. And that's where that support system comes in, because your husband and your boyfriend, he's going to be reminded sometimes. And that's going to be a toll on his pride, because he's tired of that. You know, when you're reminded in prison, at the end of the day, it's easier to accept. You're in a cage. It's, you know, you're wearing state clothes.
Right.
You're throwing a peanut butter and jelly on your floor and you know, in your cell. It's easier to say, you know what, man, I only got a little bit of more time. I only got X amount of months. I only got X amount of years. And that's your mentality. But when you get out, it's kind of like, man, I'm done with this. I'm done having my food get thrown on the floor. I'm done being told when I can go to the bathroom. And then when it consistently happens, it's a hard pill because he served his time, he served his punishment, he served all this, and that's where the support system comes in so much, saying that lifts them up, that values them, that understands, like, I understand why you're feeling like this. It's okay. I'm here. So just so you know, it's not always easy when it gets out. But
right.
Having somebody with your knowledge and your experience and having, you know, your cousin and other family members involved, the toll still comes. But it's people like you that remind them, you know what, the world looks at you and society looks at you as an inferior human being. But we're going to work on it. And this home, we look at you as a champion.
I love that. That's so important. Thank you.
I want to ask both of you, off the air, if you two could give me a call, because I'm talking now a nonprofit, but it would be something that would benefit both of you and anyone that is coming out of prison. I was going to also say I'm going to be interviewing. Her name is Marieke Liam, and she is from the Netherlands. She's a criminologist, and she's going to be contacting me after the 18th of May so we could set up the interview. But she's been doing a lot of conducting a lot of research on life as in Massachusetts and also Pennsylvania. But she's going to be bringing someone on that's going to be talking about the differences, the comparison between the prison system in the Netherlands and also in the United States, and how they became successful and the work that they're doing with little to no recidivism rates.
Yeah.
So this is going to be interesting when we can talk about that when she does come on the air. But again, I wanted to talk to you and Tom and anyone that you know of that's coming out, and I think it's going to benefit all of them because jobs are hard to find when they come out, and resources.
Especially Tom, right now.
Exactly. And Tom's been talking about wanting to work with people that, you know, to prevent the recidivism, to prevent the incarceration. I have an organization. I've been trying to find someone to actually take over as president and vice president. And we need somebody from Massachusetts. And so, but Tom, what Tom is doing. Now, at one time, it was a national advocate for the incarcerated men, women, and youth nationwide. And then I got it back on track again after stepping down, it was re-registered. It was registered out in California under a 501c3, whereas we were a 501c and are a 501c4 social service. So it's something that you two can consider. But I'd appreciate it if we can connect and talk more about it. Because
yeah,
this would fall in line with both what you're doing and also what Tom is doing. And my number is 508-583-0051. So if you could do that, that would work out good. We have about 3 minutes left. If you two want to finish the conversation, that would work out really fine. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And so I guess just in closing, this is just an area that I'm super passionate about, obviously, because I have, you know, loved ones that are currently incarcerated, have gone through incarcerated and come home, you know, and struggle to reacclimate themselves in society. And I think it's important that we just work together to advocate for incarcerated individuals when they are incarcerated and when they come home, so that they can, you know, do a lot of the things that you've been able to do, Tom, and really follow your dreams. So thank you for taking the time to speak with me today.
Yeah, 100%. It's a two-way street. You know, every relationship is a two-way street. Every story has two points of views of it. So I've learned that it's not always me. It takes, I've always said I'll never take credit of this. It's always been, you know, my support system, and it's always been a two-way street, and we need both parties. You know, we can't just, to change the prison system, you can't just have, oh, we only need somebody that can relate to me or been in a prison. That would be so unrealistic. Changes would never be made. So we need people that
right.
can relate, and people that have good hearts and understand it and understand that, you know, this population suffers, man. And thankfully, it's 2020, and we're starting to realize that. We're starting to get more, awareness from it. But we realize that by now, after, you know, 1980s, 1990s, and the early 2000s, we've seen a lot of laws change. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's still many to go, but there's reasons why the prison system continues to change its laws and continues to have changes, because we're starting to realize, like, oh my God, you know, this population, if you go to prison, it's not just, oh, I'm sentencing you to 2 years and you can go home in 2 years, I'm giving you 2 year probation and resume your life. We're starting to realize that those 2 years turn into 20, and those 2 years
right.
turn into these people never, you know, asking their dreams and aspirations the day they go to prison. These 2 years are diminishing and nobody's ever accomplishing them. So it takes people like you, and there's a lot of changes that continue to be made, but we're going to speak up and we're going to be a team, and, you know, teamwork makes the dream work.
That's right. That's what they say. And it's just holding our elected officials accountable and, you know, not giving up the fight. And, you know, I'm happy to do whatever it is that I can to help, you know, help the fight itself. So I think these conversations are pivotal in kind of moving forward. So.
All right. Thank you both for being on. We're going to be shutting down pretty soon. Tom, again, next Thursday, we will have you on. And
Al,
if you want to join us then, and I really appreciate both of you for what you're talking about and your goals and everything else. And I just want to let the audience know we are on air right now. And so I want to let the audience know, anyone that wants to call in next week to ask questions or feel comfortable making comments. Thank you so much for being on, and we are going to be ending this episode right now. Thank you both for being with me.
Thank you. I'll give you a call right now.
Thank you.
Okay, Al, you too.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.